Welcome to Behind the Sports Medicine Podcast. I'm the creator and host, Andrew Rizza. I'm an allied healthcare professional that has worked in the industry for over 25 years, with the majority of my practice being in the private physical therapy space and in public school athletics. My curiosity prompted me to create Behind the Sports Medicine Podcast to discuss the ever-changing landscape in the healthcare industry, focusing on sports medicine, physical therapy, athletic training, and sports science. Each week, we will discuss the barriers that healthcare professionals face and how we as individuals can collaborate to make the listeners better understand the industry for a better patient and athlete experience. Now, on to the show. Welcome to Episode 4, Part 2 with Vin Ferrara, CEO of Home Impact Partners. In Part 2, Vin and I discuss the challenges in the healthcare system and the need for healthcare to reach people in their homes. We discuss the need for awareness and access to healthcare, highlighting the importance of addressing both the economic impact and the availability of resources. Vin goes on to explain his goal of working with developers and builders to create healthier communities and improve the health impact of the built environment. Vin then emphasizes the role of the environment in influencing behaviors and genetics and the importance of making daily choices for better health. We wrap up our conversation with some advice for students pursuing careers in healthcare and business, emphasizing the value of mentorship, finally reflecting on his career journey and the evolution of his focus on health and home. Now on to part two.
Part of my interest in the intersection of health and home comes from is that the upstream components of your health, your behaviors, your choices, your environments, things that happen at a young age, because you spend so much time in your home, so much of your health is going to be dictated by what's happening at home. And if our health system had continuity between what was happening at home, back to the beginning of our conversation, right? If there were continuity between what was happening at home and what's happening in the actual healthcare delivery space, we have a lot better outcomes. The health of our country, the United States, is surprisingly poor when you look at metrics compared to other wealthy nations. It's actually fairly startling, some of the statistics, actually.
Well, so it is. And I think of just how advanced our technology is in our healthcare system, and it is a little staggering. But, you wonder economically how we're challenged economically with people in the country, right? How do they have access to that care and for the cost? So I think you made, thinking back to, a few minutes ago, we talked about access at home. That would lower the costs, obviously, for the patient that needs it versus the patient that has the means and the well-being to get out to a community. And you think of just rural areas. If somebody is, 50 miles from their closest regional medical facility, they're probably less likely to go to that facility than the one that's 2 miles down the road. Right. And then economically, right, how does that impact them? Can they afford to pay that copay or that coinsurance that's allowing them to get the care they need? So I think there's definitely some correlation there where healthcare costs are always going up and they don't seem to be going the other direction. There is some value in, Obamacare or even, in our state, MassHealth, which does help. But not everybody has access, which is still pretty interesting that we're, an industry or a country that's very innovative and has the means, but we still see this decline in the great amount of people that have diabetes and cardiac conditions and other, diagnoses that we could, be more preventative with.
Yeah. And, all of the innovation in the world is not going to be able to keep up with and correct the ramifications of unhealthy habits and lifestyle choices, which, starting with nutrition at the top of the list, I mean, there's no amount of healthcare technology, even with some of these incredible new drugs for weight loss again, they're on the receiving end, essentially, of, in a lot of cases, it's almost like a tidal wave of people with health issues, and some people have health issues that have nothing to do with their own decisions or choices, right? There are plenty of people that have you know, are on the receiving end of bad luck. And our system, I think, does really well when people need sort of high-end specialized care. I think the main problem we have in our country is we're just exposed to so much excess, you know, especially on the nutrition front. You know, and we were talking about air quality before, you know, sort of air pollution and poor environmental quality. And we have a lot of that, you know, and a lot of that is distributed unequally in our country also, right? So equity is a big issue. Mm-hmm. So, you know, people who are of lesser financial means typically live in environments that are more polluted. They have less access to healthy foods. And so there's a lot to unravel with our system. And the common denominator is, you know, it is the home environment. You can have a healthy home environment in a small apartment, right? In a densely packed neighborhood, right? A healthy home environment doesn't mean, you know, you have to have a gigantic home on a sprawling lot. Mm-hmm. And so if we can help people in their homes, we can do a lot, I think, to, you know, prevent some of these downstream effects. And, you know, pointed out my mother, for example, she had access to healthcare all around her. It was not an access issue. It was just sort of an awareness issue. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot to be done. You know, when you get into deep conversations about healthcare and our health system, they can go on and on. And we could probably go on and on for days about our healthcare system.
Yeah, you know, we shift gears to economics and think of the economic impact of this to just the individual. You know, I mentioned, you know, being in a rural community or even, like you said, a densely populated urban community. Where's the biggest focus, the biggest target? Like, do you think it is that, you know, geographic location or community that is more densely populated or not? And the people that maybe don't have the economic means to be able to get access to someone to come in and be able to help them understand and educate them and give them the tools and the resources to do that. Now, is there programs that are set up to be able to help those people that can't afford to be able to set their home up properly?
Yeah, I mean, there are certain programs, and you know, I wouldn't want to attempt to try and say, you know, which populations are a higher priority or you know, for our efforts, we're kind of just getting started here and want to be able to contribute value across the board. I think that there, you know, if you look at the distributions of like where people actually live in the United States, we're very much a suburban country. So, you know, you have cities, suburbs, and rural areas. And if my memory serves me correctly from an Urban Land Institute study, you know, something like 75% to 80% of the population lives in what you would describe as the suburbs.
Yeah.
So just in terms of a population density where people live. So like around us here, this sort of, you know, Boston metro arc,
yeah,
the density of people is going to live in that arc. And there's also, I think, the conventional wisdom is that, you know, really wealthy people have means and resources to figure things out on their own. Even if they're not actually figuring it out on their own, they have the resources. There are programs in place, you know, there need to be more, but, you know, for people who might be of lesser means. But there's a huge gap also in like middle class access to resources and middle class financial strain and housing affordability is hitting people very hard. So, you know, again, I would hate to attempt to say, yeah, this population needs more than that population. You need help across the board. So I'll leave it at that. We're going to try our best to provide value in all sorts of different areas.
The Home Impact Partners is going to work more with developers and, you know, builders, I think you had mentioned. What does that look like for you? Like, how are you going to work with them? Is that, you know, trying to learn more about what they're putting into the home and then trying to influence better product that goes in for healthier homes? Is that more or less the focus?
You know, my goal with that is to actually go back to medical school days, actually, you know, where I really enjoyed one-on-one conversations with patients, with people, and gathering information from them about their health issues, concerns, needs, aspirations, synthesizing that information and reporting it back. We did that pretty extensively in medical school, certainly at Columbia. And my entire career really has been in some way, shape, or form about gathering health information, you know, whether that was product feedback on a football helmet or, consulting arrangements, you know, in my time in consulting or in the investment space, sort of gathering information on a particular product or technology. My career has always been about communication through gathering that information, synthesizing it, and attempting to use it to create some sort of human impact, some sort of economic value. So what I'm seeing with an effort to work with real estate developers and investors is to do just that, is to be a conduit for information from people, consumers, families, with regard to their health needs, their aspirations, their wants, and then synthesize the information and get it in the hands of builders, developers. I'd say this is what's important to people, right? These types of amenities, in certain communities, certainly down south, out west, where there's more land, there are people building entirely new towns. You know, my good friend Tom Hoban is building. He and his team at Kitson and Partners, the CEO of Kitson and Partners, is a former NFL football player, Sid Kitson. Sid is a very visionary developer, and Tom is the president and chief investment officer of Sid's company. Sid is the CEO. They're building a community called Babcock Ranch, which was the largest land purchase in the history of the state of Florida, a 90,000 acre ranch that was bought. And they're developing a third of it into essentially a city of the future with, solar powered, the utilities are built in such a way that Hurricane Ian went right over the property last year, and it sustained essentially no damage from the way it was built. And so my conversations with my friend Tom around health and the health impact opportunity that developers like them have is what kind of got me started down this path. And so I want to be a voice for consumers, for families, with regard to their health, and then communicate that to developers so that they can make strategic decisions for people that are already living in those communities and benefiting from it. Mm-hmm. I want to be able to interview them and understand what they're doing, how they're using the amenities, how they're using the walking trails. And so those developers can use that for their marketing purposes, their public relations purposes. So there's a huge symbiotic value between health information and, what you can do with that strategically. So that's my goal, is to kind of get back into like medical student mode, interview people and synthesize that information and provide that to developers. And then along with that, I'm anticipating a newsletter that's developer and investor focused, where we're providing information sort of at the intersection of health and real estate development. So that's another effort that's getting off the ground here in parallel.
No, that's fantastic. And I, you know, you mentioned walking trails in the communities down there. And I look at, like, as we're younger, we're pretty active, or most of us are active, but we live in communities where unless we go to the gym or we go for a run or go for a bike ride or whatever, it's not in our general neighborhood, right? It's usually outside of or close to, where a lot of these communities in the retirement areas are building everything there. I was talking to a patient recently that goes to the Ocean Reef Club down in Florida. And he said there is no cars, only golf carts, but most of the people walk. There's like 90 pickleball courts. There's tennis. There's gyms. There's golf, like three or four golf courses. And you just look at that, and that healthy lifestyle, it's promoting more healthy lifestyle for them at the older ages. But, you know, why can't we have that in every community, right, where that's all available to bring a healthier home, healthier lifestyle to the people, that instead of, you know, looking back retrospectively and saying, wait a second, why can't we be just very proactive in this? Right. But it sounds like the community that your friend is building is like, that's the vision. That's the futuristic vision of how we're going to build communities.
Yeah, it is. And you know, that community is interesting too, in that it's not a retirement community. I mean, it is, you know, I believe at this moment they have 6,000 or 7,000 residents on their way to a planned 55,000. And so they have schools now. There's a K-8 school. There's a high school. There's, you know, athletic facilities. There's a town center. But it's so big. It would be like, you know, I'm building a new, you know, Natick or Wellesley, a town of that size.
Yeah, pretty big.
Yeah, and it takes, you know, it takes a couple decades for that to get built out. And there are other communities like that across the country. But there are communities like that they're on a smaller scale that exist in the Northeast. But we can kind of create those communities also. You know, one of the newsletters, a recent one, you know, the theme was build your own blue zone. So you probably heard about these blue zones around the world where people live to very extended ages. And the company Blue Zones has sort of, I would say, categorized the things that go on in those communities. And what it boils down to is those places essentially they make healthy choices easy based upon sort of the patterns and habits of people. So movement is sort of a natural part of the lifestyle, and eating plant-based foods is part of the lifestyle. And so one of our newsletters was entitled essentially, you know, Build Your Own Blue Zone, focusing on movement and nutrition and finding the right mindset. But people need help doing that, I think. They need education. It's one of the things we're seeking to do is kind of bring that information to people. So, you know, our area around here, when the weather is right, you know, we actually have a lot of what is necessary, right? We do have walking trails, and we have, you know, I would say there's access, obviously, to healthcare here. There is generally access to healthy foods. When the weather is not great, you know, when it's cold and it's raining like it is today, you know,
you're locked in the house.
Yeah, we stay inside. And I think a lot of it comes down to that social element too. What are your friends doing? Right. What are your behavioral patterns? And so I think if people can get educated on their health and how they can really control it, and sort of the daily decisions that they can make. And I'm not here preaching like I've been perfect with that either. Right. Like I've got my own health issues that I've dealt with, and a lot of them were sort of, you know, lifestyle or nutrition related. So this isn't me attempting to preach to anybody. It's really just all the collectively what we can all do, I think, are make these daily choices with regard to how we move, what we eat, who we interact with. And it's been shown, I think, that those types of small daily decisions are the kind of things that bring you a good health span, you know, not just longevity, but bring you health today.
I'm the first one to raise my hand, and I'm eating the chocolate chip cookies before anybody else is. So,
yeah,
the nutritional decisions I make.
If you're making good choices most of the time, the chocolate chip cookies are there. They're not.
It was interesting. I was talking to my wife, kind of off subject here. My wife was her grandmother. Always when they went out to dinner, she would order dinner and then order dessert and take the dinner home. So she would eat her dessert and then take her dinner home for later. So, and she lived till she was like 92. So it was like, she's doing something right. But I think it's the lifestyle.
People crack the code. Yeah. My grandmother is about to turn 100.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the Italian. I'm telling you, my grandmother and all her. So my dad, pretty big Italian family. I don't know how big yours is. My dad came from 8 brothers and sisters, my mother 12. All of my father's aunts, uncles, I think the uncles were a little bit, I think they probably passed in their late 70s, early 80s, but all the women lived into their mid 90s. And they all kept, you know, they started at like 5'5" and they ended at 4'8" Italian women. But they, my grandmother would cook. We could smell the food from a mile away. I mean, she would cook and it's crazy. We talk about this. cooked in lard, right? Everything was heavy oil. Everything was fried, but everything she cooked was fresh every day. If I went to see her, she'd go, Andy, can you go down to the market and get me some meat? Can you go down and get me some chicken? It was fresh. Yeah. Versus a lot of the stuff that we're getting now is like we're going and getting stuff for a week and putting in the refrigerator. It's not every day. So I guess it goes back to the lifestyle of what you're able to do in your busy life and what's accessible to you during the day. But
And then there is a genetic component to it that we don't fully understand yet. You know, so my grandmother, who's 100, about to turn 100, you know, she has outlived three or four children. My mother being one of them.
It's amazing.
She's outlived her husband by 25 years, I think. And we like to say, you know, she has this very easygoing mindset. Everything is just, you know, she has a very peaceful way about her. So my brothers and I are like, you know, my cousins, my brothers are like, maybe that's the secret. It's her mindset. You know, she's not, for whatever reason, she seems capable of not, you know, absorbing stress the way other people do. I think if you look at like the functional medicine space, it would say there's our genetics, there's our behaviors, and there's our environment. And actually your behaviors and your environments can actually influence your genetics. And we're sort of led to believe growing up that our genetics are our destiny. It turns out that there's this field of epigenetics, which is essentially the study of the way in which our genes respond. And what our genes produce is in large part in response to our environment, in large part in response to our behaviors. And then you look at the ways in which our behaviors are influenced by our environment, and it brings you to this, and it brings you to this, hey, the thing to focus on is your environment.
Yeah.
If you focus on your environment, you can improve its direct impact on your health through things like air quality, et cetera. But it also, you can improve your health indirectly by the way your environment influences your behaviors. And that's the whole message behind the Blue Zone topic too, is like your environment is really, really critical for your health. And it's, if you're going to attempt to change something, don't start by just attempting to change your behaviors through willpower. Change your environment first. You know, set up your environment so that it makes your healthier choices easier. That's kind of the messaging there.
Yeah, I mean, I 100% agree with that. I feel like that what you're in and what your environment that you're rooted in, it's like where always be present where your feet are, right? So be present where you are and understand that. And I think that will bring good things to you. It's the people around you. So I think that's an important message. What advice would you give to, you know, a young student or even a rising high schooler or even, you know, a college age student that is just starting out their career, trying to figure it out, that wants to pursue a career in medicine, public health, or even business? Is there something that you can, you know, look back to that helped shape your career that you could influence or try to message to those ones that are looking to move into those spaces?
Yes. And, you know, my career has been a journey, right? It's still a journey. It's something I think that I got sort of a late start on thinking about, you know, and especially as an athlete, you know, as a college athlete, especially, you're so consumed by that part of your life, you know, that career planning and thinking about it can happen too late or happen not enough. And, you know, I guess my thinking back, there's probably two things that I would recommend to anyone. One is pay attention to, be mindful of, sort of soak in the people that are around you, back to the topic of your environment. You're most likely surrounded by people who have a lot of expertise, who would love to help you.
Mm-hmm.
You're surrounded by people who are potential mentors. And if they're your direct peers, they're people that are going to go on to do their own things that could be of interest to you. It's easy to get like super hyper-focused on what you're doing, you know, whether it's your sports or your classwork, or to get mired in, you know, the latest rumination you might have about something, right? And you know, so my advice would be like to kind of keep your head up, keep those connections alive, and ask for help from people. Conversation with whether it's your athletic trainers, your teachers, your coaches, your parents, friends. There's a lot of people around who want to help.
Right.
So just kind of being open to that. And now with LinkedIn too, you know, you can get on LinkedIn as a high school kid and be connected with, you know, people that have had incredible careers. And so I would say that's just one, is sort of the connections. Number two, I would say pay close attention to the energy you derive from certain activities.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're all hardwired in certain ways for certain activities. We might have an interest in a field, like we might be interested in sports medicine, right? But maybe we're not hardwired for, you know, the realities of the lifestyle, right? Or the path to take. Maybe it's, you know, maybe our interest in sports medicine is really an interest in sports in general. And maybe we're hardwired to be more on sort of the business side of things. And so I would say, you know, and you could probably get help from your mentors, your teachers. Try and figure out what really gives you energy. Close your eyes and think about a particular field. Like, so if you're interested in sports medicine, right? It's not all about, and you can tell us this better than anybody, it is not all about the championship games and, you know, all the fun parts of sports. It is work, mm-hmm. right? It is traveling. It is early hours. It's, you know, you got your hands
weekends,
on
people. Holidays. Yeah.
Weekends, holidays. You got your hands on people. You're talking to people about, so what's going on with them? And some people are, you know, incredibly well hardwired to that. You know, I assume you are. If not, you've learned it very well or whatever. And I think, you know, early on for me, I was interested in certain topics. But when I look back on them, they might not have been a good fit for me energetically, whereas other things might have been a better fit for me energetically. And, that's might be a little bit of vague advice, but the things that we're hardwired for often show up at a young age, right? Whether you're an introvert or an extrovert, or, you know, if you're comfortable with like a sales process, like reaching out to someone, you know, for a cold sales process, if you're comfortable with that at a young age, you're probably going to be really good at that as you get older. If you're not comfortable with it, you might be able to get comfortable with it, but, you know, maybe you're not hardwired for a sales role, right? So, those are probably the two things I would say, you know, your network, people around you, and those people can be helpful to you, I think, in helping you sort of understand what really brings you energy. And if you're energized by something and you have people around you that can kind of help you navigate it, you'll be in really good shape as you go forward.
No, I think that's a great message. You'd mentioned the word mentorship, and I try to link this to every conversation that I have with, you know, young athletes or someone pursuing a career in physical therapy or athletic training, or even, you know, even with my daughter who's, you know, in graduate school for speech pathology. I think the power of mentorship is huge. I think it gives us the ability to be able to look to the people that helped us along the way, and even people we still look towards. And I still have my mentors that I've been, you know, connected with and still talk to on occasion. And I've been in the industry for almost 30 years. So, can you think back to like a mentor that kind of helped you along the way as a young aspiring college age student? And then is there someone now that you still turn to help you with some of these business decisions or ideas you have?
Yeah. You know, I think, you know, I would say back in the early days as a young athlete, Dr. Boland, Dr. Steiner, both, you know, were team physicians at Harvard. I think were very influential. And Dr. Steiner, he did my shoulder surgery, but I also shadowed him in his office, and it was very enlightening actually, because like I was saying, you know, you think of sports medicine as related to like the team and the game and all that. And going to his office, it was a very different environment. And he was, you know, treating patients who weren't athletes and people that were coming in, it just gave me a very different perspective on what orthopedics was actually, you know, really, really all about. I value them a lot. I would say later on in my career, my experience with Zenith, you know, I had a chance to have some folks as board members. Bill Cleary, you know, was actually a board member, a great mentor, friend. There were some folks, who were helpful, I think, as I was navigating being an entrepreneur, right? That came with its own set of challenges. And I think looking back, that's something I could have done more robustly, was have sort of a personal board of directors, a handful of people that you can call upon. And that's something I think kids can do today, you know, find a handful of people that you trust, and start to build those relationships, and people will help you, you know, that the most people are hardwired to provide help to people that are sincerely looking for it.
Yeah, no, I think that's important. Is there anything to kind of close out today? I think it's, you know, been a great conversation, a lot of good insight on what your company is, what you're trying to do, which I think is fantastic for the general public and even for the healthcare industry. So I applaud you for that. I think it's amazing. Is there anything that you would change in your kind of your path, right? It's interesting when you look back to say, is there anything we'd do differently? Or, you know what, am I on the right path right now? And I think if we think of our careers, we're always educating, we're always changing, we're trying to make ourselves better. So I feel like there's always an evolution of what we're doing every day. But is there anything that you think that you could have done better? Or do you feel like you're on the path that you'd like to be on?
I'd say yes and yes. There are probably countless things that I look back on and say, I could have done that better. I could have done that sooner. I could have not done that at all. And I think it's important, you know, I know some people say, oh, I never look back, and I do, you know, and I look back and I try and think, okay, if I had that to do over again, what would I do? And so there's a ton of things little things I would change, right? Like how I handled that situation or that conversation. You know, to me, I guess that's sort of still the quarterback in me. I don't identify that much anymore as being a quarterback, but that is kind of a culture of the quarterback, is you play the game and then you watch the film and you watch more film and you go back and you look and you're like, okay. And you have to be super accountable, right? You're in front of the team and the coaches are like, you know, then why'd you do that? And you get used to saying, yeah, my bad. I screwed that up. I should have done this. There's a great Steve Young video on accountability. If you've ever seen it, if you haven't, I'll send it to you. And so I do that all the time. I don't do it in a way where like, man, I can't believe I did that. So I try and keep a positive mindset around it. I do feel like the last 10 years professionally have been very much kind of a journey, you know, launching a football helmet company and, you know, doing that for close to 10 years. The what's next after that, there's not an obvious like, oh, here's the next thing that you should do.
Right.
Because it's a very unique, it's not exactly healthcare. It's not exactly sports. It's a little bit of sports medicine. It's a little bit of consumer. It's a little bit of neuropsych. It's a little bit of, and so finding the exact next thing, you know, especially I think all entrepreneurs kind of go through this. I would say it's been a bit of a challenge to find like that absolute right next thing. So I've done a handful of things over the past years that have been great experiences. I've made great networks, but I do feel now what I'm doing is like, okay, this is what it all led up to is now, right? This intersection of health and home. and all that goes into it, there's no way I would have had that perspective on it without going through those experiences before.
Yeah.
And so I feel very energized about what I'm doing now. And look, there's a whole host of things we still need to do, and we're just getting it off the ground. But I feel very energized by it. So, yeah, there are things I would change, but I wouldn't change them in a way that put me in a different place than now, right? Like, we that would be, I don't operate that way. So, like I said, my answer is yes and yes to your dual questions.
Yeah, I mean, if I look back to your journey in, you know, knowing you and kind of what I've observed, like going the, you know, graduating from Harvard, going, getting your MD, going to business school, developing the helmet, which we kind of connected again, you know, that must be 12, 15 years ago, right? When you brought the helmet over to Weston and we took a look at it and we started to use it. Your vision has always been to protect the public, whether it's athletes or non-athletes, right? I think now that kind of comes full circle back to where health and home is, looks like something that you're moving back into protecting the public, right? So I think your mind is still, it's almost like your career is still medically based and is going to be medically based with a side hustle of business, right? So I think there's always that, you know, I think when we're involved in medicine, no matter what, if you're a nurse, if you're a physician, if you're a physical therapist, occupational therapist, your mindset is always on the healthcare industry, no matter how you slice it. So it's hard for us to get away from that. We just might have some offshoots, and it seems like that's kind of the route that you're going.
Yeah, I think that health theme has run through everything that I've done. You know, there's a lot of health care in my family. You know, my mother was an EMT. My three brothers, my one's married to a physician, one's married to a nurse, one's married to a woman who's been in healthcare marketing, working for a hospital and health system. You know, one of my nieces is in pursuing physical therapy. So, you know, there's just, we've been, I think, a family broadly that's been focused around health, and health needs of people are certainly not going anywhere. They're only increasing. So I'm always, I think, drawn back to that. And then I, you know, back to that topic of like, what gives you energy? That was really important for me to reflect, even at age, you know, I'm 51 now, but I would say a couple of years ago, I was, you know, talking about mentorship. I was getting actually some career coaching. And the person said, well, what were you like as a kid? You know, what did you like to do? And I said, you know, when I was really left to my own devices, I'd play with Legos for hours. My mother used to say, like, you know, I'd leave you alone and we wouldn't hear from you. You'd be building Legos. And that kind of got me thinking, like, you know what? I actually really enjoy working with my hands. And actually, that's what kind of got me started down the path of medicine, was the idea of being a surgeon. And when I'm left to my own devices now, I'm building stuff around the house. I'm tinkering with, you know, airflow and lighting and or doing yard work. And that's what triggered me to be like, you know what? I should focus on like this intersection of health and home. I've been in health for a long time, but the home and it's like sort of the built environment for me is very motivating. My cousins, you know, my ancestors came from Italy to the Bronx, New York, to build homes in the Bronx. My cousins, mm-hmm. on my mother's side of the family are still builders. I mean, they are like steel workers. And so that's what sort of triggered me to get into this, was like that reflection on what really gives me energy.
Yeah.
Was the idea of like building things. And so I was like, all right, how do I take this health background that I have? And I'm still glad I have it. And what can I do moving forward with it? And it all kind of came together around this intersection of health and home. So interesting how you know, things take on these journeys, and you just kind of have to pay attention along the way and stay connected with people along the way. So it's been fun staying connected with you. And as I said when we started, I appreciate everything you've done for me personally and for our our family, our kids, it means a lot.
Well, I truly appreciate that. And I do appreciate you coming on today. Again, everybody, Vin Ferrara, homeimpactpartners.com. And then also, Welcome Health and Home is the newsletter. And, Vin, thanks again. I'll see you soon.
Thanks, Riz. Appreciate it.
All right, man. Thanks.
Okay. Talk to you soon.
Thank you for tuning in to Behind the Sports Medicine Podcast. This is your creator and host, Andrew Rizza. If you enjoyed the content from today's episode, give us a like, leave a comment, and share on social media. You can find us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow us on Instagram at Behind Sports Med Podcast, on X under AJR Sports Sci, or check out our websites at ajrsportscience.podbean.com and at ajrsportscience.com. You can also subscribe to our YouTube channel at AJR Sports Science. Stay tuned for our next episode.